But other than those two teams, I think I can't have Julio as a Patriot. I love him too much. He's one of my favorite players of all time. I can't. I cannot have that happen.
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and riding with me, as always, my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, are you ready to discuss the really sexy AFC West today?
I'm loving these division previews, man. They're super fun. We can attack, obviously, like, you want to bring up as much as possible, but, like, there's a lot of different talking points for a lot of these teams, and this division has, you know, one team that we kind of know what we're getting from one team, but then the other three are pretty interesting, too. So, yeah, and the NFL season also is just, like, not, even though it technically didn't start, I mean, we got the Julio trade stuff, we got the Rodgers stuff, so it's like, things are going to change. Apparently, Julio is about to get traded, and we kind of talked about it, but like, that's still crazy to me. Like, I know these elite players that have been on teams for their whole career have changed teams. It's still weird, though, to picture Julio somewhere else, but it looks like it's like a 90% chance of happening.
I mean, right now, everything we're hearing about it, even Julio talking about it in lore, that was a total mess.
Yeah, how do you let that happen?
That's crazy, man. Like, not a fan of that TV show, still not a fan, wasn't a fan, not going to be a fan for kind of mess like that, dude. Like, putting that man on the spot live, I seriously doubt he knew that was the case.
I don't think he knew, like, at all. There's no way.
No way, dude. There's no way. Even if you're disgruntled and he wants to get out of Atlanta, he knows he's going to get out of Atlanta. Why would you do that? So I don't think that he knew that, but before we dive into these AFC West teams, man, I mean, kind of give me your thoughts. Like, give me two teams you think Julio could absolutely land with. Like, where do you see him going?
Yeah, so these teams need to be somewhat contenders, and they need to have cap space. And he said he wants to win, obviously. So, Elliot Christ, he's been banging the table for the Chargers. That would be very fun. I mean, they have a need at receiver outside of Keenan Allen. Mike Williams makes splash plays here and there, but you know, Keenan Allen and Julio Jones would be really, really elite for Justin Herbert. Would I love it for the target ceilings that we want for Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler, who we'll talk about today? Not really, but that's a team that I could see. The Colts are, I think the Colts might be the favorite for betting right now because they've had so much cap going into free agency, and a lot of us expected maybe they go for Juju or Kenny Galladay or one of these receivers, and they didn't address the position at all other than re-signing T.Y. Hilton. But T.Y. Hilton and Michael Pittman, it's not exactly the 1-2 you want, but if you get Julio and they're your 2 and 3, I mean, that could be really fun. And then other than that, because I'm like, the Falcons said they prefer to trade him to an AFC team, which I think is dumb. Like, if you can get the best possible offer, like if, I don't know, like, whoever, like, name an NFC, the Packers. Like, if they offer more than the Colts or Chargers, I'm taking that deal. I don't care if they play in the same conference as me. But other than those two teams, I think I can't have Julio as a Patriot. I love him too much. He's one of my favorite players of all time. I can't. I cannot have that happen.
I mean, we talked about it and how, like, both off air and on, about how the Patriots offense, like, they opened the checkbook up this offseason. Mm-hmm. And if you look at this roster, these moves all make a lot more sense because, like, they stacked Kendrick Bourne, Jonnu, Hunter Henry, Nelson, like, all these tertiary pieces to fill out the depth chart. Did they overpay? That's a conversation for a different day. But really, if you look at this offense, man, top five offensive line, top three, like, they're an alpha wide receiver away from being a legit, like, scary type of offense. Like, that's all they need, dude. Like, I'm not going to rule out the Patriots. And I know that, like,
I think I saw Julio said he wants to play with Cam.
I mean, he said he wants to play with a winner. And I understand the Patriots didn't win last year, but, like, they've got a lot of opt-outs coming back. Their defense is much improved in the offseason. So is the offense. Whether you want to talk about Cam or Mac, like, this roster is really good, dude. And, I mean, the Patriots right now, they're inside or at least close to that top 10. They got $15 million in cap space. They can make it happen. I think that they're the third in the pecking order of teams that I could see really going. And I'm with you. Like, I think it's all AFC teams, like, that he could possibly land on. A lot of them have the cap, too,
which helps.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And below
like
the NFC
teams that have cap is, like, Arizona. They have a decent amount of cap, but, I mean, do they just go, you know, absolutely just, you know, nuclear with receivers and have four of the best receivers of the last 15 years on the same team? Now, obviously, two of them are, you know, in the back end of their careers. I guess Julio is too, but, I mean, Hopkins, A.J. Green, if Fitzgerald comes back and Julio, like, that's a fantasy roster. That's a fantasy roster on your team.
Well, so, I mean, if you're rounding out the top 12 of, like, cap space right now, as we sit recording this, Jaguars, Jets, Bengals, he ain't going to any of those. They're not going to pay for him, and he's not going to win.
They're not winning, yeah.
Number five is the Los Angeles Chargers. So I'm with Elliot. You need to go check out his piece over at FTN Bets. Look at all the action there, as well as the prop shop. Get in on these lines, man, because, I mean, as news comes out, the favorites are going to change daily. So with that line movement, you got to get into that, man. But then talking about more of these teams, Broncos are next. He ain't going there. Lions, no. San Francisco, probably not. Washington is a really interesting dark horse candidate, because they got a pretty good sound roster, man. I mean, I'm not going to rule it out. Again, that's not going to be inside my top three. But then you're looking at rounding outside the top 12 in cap space. Patriots, Panthers, don't think he goes to Carolina, and then the Colts. The Chargers and the Colts are the top two teams for me. Like, that's where I think. Because, again, if we're looking at, like, rosters to where, okay, what's the composition of this roster? Who has cap space? Where does this all kind of fill in? Okay, well, looking at these teams, I mean, the Patriots, the Colts, and the Chargers, man. And honestly, like, I could flip any order of this, but I really think the Colts make a ton of sense. Like, that's my favorite right now. Because I think that their roster is ready to win now. I think Tennessee, we've talked about this in previous episodes, I think they're going to take another step back. I think the Colts could handily be, like, if you add Julio to this roster, you have Wentz, you have Pittman, you have all these other parts and pieces, you have a good offensive line, you have Jonathan Taylor. Like, this is a quiet Super Bowl contender, and I know they still got to go through Kansas City and Cleveland, but you add
Julio. Did you do that
Julio
on purpose? You definitely did that on purpose. 100%. There's no doubt that you just did that on purpose by leaving Buffalo out. You're unbelievable. I know you
waiting.
Did it.
I was waiting. You didn't even let me finish the sentence. And I was waiting for you to get at me on it.
I've been doing this podcast too long with you to know that you have 100% done that on purpose. And I actually love it. It's unbelievable.
Look, I can't sidestep a chance to sit here and try to sit here and pour a little bit of salt on it, man. There's no way. But no, seriously, though, like, with Julio, oh, I gotta compose myself here. With Julio, I really think that if you're looking at roster compositions, the Colts make a ton of sense, the Chargers, the Patriots. That's kind of where I sit, man. Cleveland does make some sense, though, man. They got cap space. Like, we've talked about Cleveland. Could be a top five defense. Legit. Like, with all the parts or pieces and additions they have made. Offensive line, again, like, best in the NFL. You add Julio on top of Odell and Jarvis and that rushing game? Ooh, my Lord, man.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where he goes and how much fantasy is impacted by not only his projections, because outside of the Chargers, I would say wherever he goes, he's gonna move down in my rankings if he were to stay with Atlanta. And even still, like, he's got the rapport with Matt Ryan. He's, you know, the 1A or 1B with Atlanta. Like, he's gonna move down more than likely. But will he impact someone like Keenan Allen or Austin Eckler or, you know, Michael Pittman or the breakout chances for Michael Pittman or Paris Campbell? It's going to be really interesting to see what he and who he impacts for fantasy, assuming he gets traded within the next. And I think Diana Rossini from ESPN came out today and said it sounds like it's going to go down within the next week. So we will see.
It's really interesting, man. I can't wait to see how all that unfolds, man. And speaking of projections and how this all shakes out, man, let's dive into the AFC West. Kick this off with the Denver Broncos. Cortland Sutton returning to this passing attack. I've heard a lot of discussions about him this offseason and where he factors in. He's the unquestioned number one. And how people think about him, man. Like, I'm not as high on him, and I'm just going to throw this out there. I am not as high on him as other people. Both with the way that, like, unless we're projecting that Aaron Rodgers lands in Denver, which right now as recording this, I can't walk into the season automatically projecting that that is what happens. So if that's not the case, I think that Denver is showing us what they want to do, man. Like, adding Javonte Williams with Melvin Gordon, offensive line's going to be good, all the defensive additions. I think this offense is going to be extremely run-heavy with a game manager quarterback. And if that's the case, I'm lower on Cortland Sutton than probably consensus, dude. Like, he's a wide receiver 3 for me. And I think that people's ideas of him and what they remember about 2019 is a lot shinier. A lot shinier than what actually happened. Like, people think about, like, this guy. Okay, yes, he got over 1,000 receiving yards. Yes, he got 6 receiving touchdowns. He was the wide receiver 28 in fantasy points per game, Adam. Like, how are we going to rank this guy higher than a wide receiver 3? Like, I can't do it. Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, I haven't. Like, I would feel fine with him as a wide receiver 3 because I do think there's upside. But as a wide receiver 2, like, we. In 2019, he was competing for targets with Emmanuel Sanders. I think that was his last year, and he was in and out of the lineup. And then that's kind of it. And now you have Jerry Jeudy. You still have Noah Fant. You have the running game. And Denver, like, they could have, you know, they drafted Patrick Surtain in the first round after addressing the secondary in the offseason, right? They added Kyle Fuller. They added Ronald Darby. Like, they added a bunch of players to their defense and still went corner. So I think they're going to be a team that, like, they were a good defense last year and were missing players, right? Their secondary was completely depleted. Von Miller was out of the lineup. Now they're getting Von Miller back, Bradley Chubb back. The secondary has been improved. Justin Simmons is back, and they brought him back. So it's like their defense, I think, is going to be a top 5 overall unit, and they have a committee at running back that they're going to want to use. They know that their quarterback situation is less than ideal. And, like, a lot of people, I'm interested in Jerry Jeudy, especially for Dynasty. We'll talk about him in a minute. But, like, you can't love Jeudy this year and love Sutton and expect, but then, like, you know, kind of not love Drew Lock or not like Drew Lock, because Drew Lock is not supporting multiple receivers in fantasy in this offense. Neither is Teddy Bridgewater if he starts. So it's like one of them's going to be bad. I feel like I don't see a way where both Sutton and Jeudy are good. I think one can be good and the other can be fine, but I don't see a way where both these guys, like, there's offenses that can support multiple top 36 receivers. We talked about the Steelers, the Bengals. Like, Denver is not one of those teams.
No, I just don't see it, dude. Like, Denver last year tried to cover up for the quarterback play. Unless we're projecting Rodgers to land there, they're going to do it again this year. And all the offseason moves have showed us that, man. Like, they were 6th in neutral script rushing rate last year. That's not going away. Hell, it could go higher. So, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and people are going to be drafting Cortland Sutton ahead of me because I think a lot of people are looking at him as a mid-wide receiver too, and I just don't think the passing volume with all of the available receiving options on this offense is going to be there unless he hits, like, crazy outlier touchdown metric, which, dude, we saw from Teddy last year. If he's the starter, where are the touchdowns coming from? They didn't happen last year in Carolina. Similar, really good supporting cast. So, saying they're going to happen now with a run-first team, possibly? Just not there for it, dude. But, I mean, moving over to Jerry Jeudy, what are your thoughts around? Because we kind of touched on stuff for redraft. What do you think about him for Dynasty? Because I think he's really, really interesting. Like, I wrote him up the other day in my Dynasty Trade Targets article over at FTN Fantasy. Go check that out, man. I wrote him up the other day there, and I think that he's a trade four because Courtland Sutton's going to be a free agent after this year, man. Jerry Jeudy could be the number one, and we're talking about, like, I mean, what people's thoughts are on Denver. If everybody's eyes are on Sutton, I'm going to be staring at Jerry Jeudy, man. But what do you think about him for Dynasty?
He's very interesting because if you watch the film on Jerry Jeudy, he was getting open a ton with his great route running. It's just Drew Lock was so bad and so inaccurate. And you're looking at the Sports Info Solutions. Look at the quarterbacks in terms of their passes that are deemed catchable. Among quarterbacks with 100 pass attempts last year, Drew Lock was like bottom seven in terms of his percentage of passes that were catchable. It was like just over 70%. It was down there with Daniel Jones, Trubisky, Mike Glennon, Flacco, Carson Wentz. We know how bad Carson Wentz was last year. Sam, like, it was bad, especially on deep passes. Like, there were plays where Jerry Jeudy was just getting a ton of separation, and he should have had, like, a 40-yard touchdown. Instead, he has to come back to the sideline or come back to the football, and he gets, you know, a 20-yard play instead of a much larger gain. And that's not going to be fixed, whether it's Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater, because Teddy Bridgewater was one of the worst deep ball throwers in the NFL last year. If, you know, there's been a lot of talk over the last couple weeks about in Dynasty sending out trade offers for Jeudy now in case they do get Aaron Rodgers, because if they trade for Aaron Rodgers, Jerry Jeudy is going to become maybe one of the more untouchable receivers in Dynasty. I don't think anybody's going to want to trade him away. So if you want to go that route, I get it, because even if you do trade for Jerry Jeudy and they don't get Aaron Rodgers, there's still a lot of potential there. We know the player. We know how open he gets. Last year, he was top five in terms of air yards. The only problem was they were all kind of just like unrealized air yards, right? They didn't connect on much. So if he's, you know, this time next year, if Sutton's not there, the clear-cut wide receiver one, there's a lot of potential there. I love the player. It's just right now, you know, I don't see a way where Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater can support. I mean, Bridgewater did it last year in supporting two receivers, but DJ Moore wasn't as good as we thought he should be, and he should have been because he was running the deep routes, and that's where Teddy wasn't good. So it's like if Judy's running that and Sutton is running more intermediate, I do think, though, it's going to be Sutton running deeper routes and Jeudy more intermediate, because Jeudy entering the year, we were like, okay, he's going to play in the slot. And then Sutton went out, and he kind of moved all over the formation, played out wide, played, you know, ran a lot of deep routes. But if Sutton's back and healthy, that could make Jeudy better in terms of, he's going to be more efficient. He has to be more efficient. And he did have issues with drops. Like, first game, there was that doubleheader on Monday night where he was dropping everything. He finished the season with an 18.8% drop rate. It's actually the third worst in the NFL among qualified receivers. Some of those were tough catches, but a lot of them were really bad drops. But I don't care about drops, really. I really don't. He'll be more efficient this year. Down the line, I'm interested, but his ceiling just might not be realized unless the quarterback situation improves.
Yeah, I don't disagree there, man. I think that if you're going after Jerry Jeudy in Dynasty, you're looking at the two factors of Denver probably upgrades the quarterback position, or at least that's what your hope is after this season, and then Sutton moves on, and Judy's the number one. You know, so I think some things could be a little bit better this year for him, even with Teddy under center, because Teddy, I mean, look, we could talk about, like, deep passing, what he doesn't want to do, the things that his shortcomings. He was 7th in catchable target rate. That is far, far, far better than Drew Lock was last year. So I think just in the sense of getting the ball in this man's hands when he's wide open, and I'm with you, I think it's going to be better, but I'm also with you in the fact of, like, I don't care about drops. Don't care about drops. Yeah. Don't care about drops. And don't care about drops.
We have on the site, we have Jeff Ratcliffe does the expected fantasy points. He has a whole table full of it. I mean, Jerry Jeudy was 10th in expected fantasy points, or sorry, expected receiving yards. So, like, he should have had a much better season than he did. Like, he was up there with DJ Moore, who I talked about, should have had a better year. Tyreek Hill, Jerry Jeudy, like, he should have had a much better season. And it's and the reason you see that is because the guy was getting open a ton.
I'm with you, man. Like, he was open. Like, regardless of, like, if you went back and even watched all the all 22, Jerry Jeudy was open at will, dude. So I think that, like, the talent is not the question. It's more the situation around him. But if you're able to get him, you know, not saying, like, on the discount, but, like, if you're able to get him at least a reasonable price point right now in Dynasty and stuff, I think it's worth it because the upside is there and the target volume could be there moving forward as well as if they address the quarterback position, man. So out of the passing attack over to the ground game, Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon, what do you make out of this situation moving into this year, man? Could you see yourself drafting both? Neither? Like, what's up with this?
So you've talked about this a lot already, and I agree. Like, if there are two running backs that I'm targeting, if I go receiver or tight end heavy to start my draft and I'm going with, like, a modified zero RB approach, it's going to be Gus Edwards of Baltimore, who we talked about, and Javonte Williams. Because Javonte Williams is going to enter the season as the 1B, most likely. But there's a situation that can be had down the stretch where we saw Miles Sanders' second half of his rookie year a couple years ago where he was great and a potential league winner. DeAndre Swift last year. Javonte Williams has that in his range of outcomes to be a league winner the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season. We saw last year when Phillip Lindsay was healthy that Denver wants to use multiple running backs. When Phillip Lindsay was active last season, Melvin Gordon averaged just over 12 carries per game. It was over 18 carries per game when Lindsay was inactive. So I think there's a path, especially if we talk about them relying on their defense and running the football, for Javonte Williams to get 12, 13 touches a game. And that's flex worthy right off the bat. And then obviously if anything happens to Melvin Gordon or they just down the stretch turn to Javonte Williams, who we know is a super talented player, literally broke PFF's metrics in terms of tackle breaking, then he's got, you know, high-end RB2 upside and an offense that's going to want to run the football. So yeah, I'm just going to, unless the hype, and it's possible by the end of the summer that Javonte goes ahead of Melvin Gordon after we see him in the preseason, because again, we do have preseason this year and stuff like that. But as long as Melvin Gordon's going before Javonte Williams, I'm probably just going to wait the round or two and get Javonte.
Dude, did you see the video out of the front office for Denver the other day that leaked out from the draft? They were talking about Javonte Williams in the same era of Nick Chubb and Ezekiel Elliott. And I'm not putting him up there as far as a prospect. Like, I love him. Absolutely love him as a runner. And I love his prospects right now for this season because Melvin Gordon's the only thing that's pushing his ADP down. The only thing. That legit takes an injury or a decision by the coaching staff to flip this depth chart, or it could already be flipped for as high as they are.
Let me ask you this. If Melvin Gordon's a free agent when the Broncos draft Javonte Williams, who are you taking in fantasy, Javonte or Najee Harris?
Woo! Oof. Lord, that's a really.
I mean, it's kind of a pointless question because Melvin Gordon's there, but it's kind of a fun thing to think about.
I mean, I would still barely lean Najee, only because I think the offense is going to score points more. It's a really interesting talking point, though, because you're right, man. I mean, like, look, I think Javonte Williams would be a top 15 back. Like, top 15. You put him in the same, you put him above, like, Miles Sanders. Put him above J.K. Dobbins. If Melvin Gordon was not there, that's where he'd be for me, man. Like, that's where I'd be on Javonte.
And I think there is going to be a situation where Javonte just does a lot with his carries, and we could see it. Like Phillip Lindsay, like Gordon goes in the Phillip Lindsay role from last year, and Javonte takes Melvin Gordon's role. But yeah, I know you've talked about him as an ideal elite zero RB guy. So
yeah, man. I mean, that's where I'm at, dude. Like, I think Javonte Williams is a fantastic candidate if you want to go wide receiver heavy early in drafts. The problem with it is the closer we get to the season, RB thirst is real, and if we get any other training camp videos, sound bites, anything else comes out of camp, or if Melvin Gordon goes down, the price is going to go up on Javonte Williams. Like, I'm in on it right now. I have him a little bit, or put it this way. You'll have to head to ftnfantasy.com to check out my ranks to find out where I have him currently and where he could possibly go if anything changes with that situation. Moving over to, dude, Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, we all kind of know what to expect out of this offense. It's going to be fireworks. It's going to be Patty Mahomes. It's going to be Andy Reid. And it's going to be all kinds of gloriousness. Few things to consider and chop up about the offense, though. What are your thoughts? Because going back to the bounce back episode with Dave Richard, people probably remember what my thoughts were regarding this running back. But what do you think about CEH for this year? Do you see Edwards-Helaire having a bounce back season? Or are you kind of like, I'm a little bit more tepid about that?
Like I said, I think it really depends on how he's kind of brought on in training camp and in the preseason, because I talked about it a lot. We didn't get that preseason, or we didn't get that training camp from Clyde last year. And I wonder if that had to do with him not playing in the 2-minute drill. It was weird though. That first game against Houston, he got like 25 carries, got all the goal line work. I mean, he had 6 carries from inside the 5-yard line in that game, didn't score on any of them, as we all know. The rest of the season, though, he saw 3 carries from inside the 5-yard line. Like, that had to have been by design. And I wonder if another year under his belt with another offseason and a legitimate offseason, not to mention the additions they made to the offensive line. You bring in Joe Tooney. You bring in Kyle Long. You bring in Orlando Brown. You draft Creed Humphrey in the 2nd round, and you draft Trey Smith in the 6th round. That offensive line should be, at worst, like top 7 this year, so that's going to help. If he can be that goal line back, and if the Chiefs aren't getting cute like they did last year and pitching it to Kelce and running these weird plays with Mahomes and Mecole Hardman, he's got like top 5 potential, because he's going to catch probably 45 to 60 passes, somewhere in that range. And if he's scoring touchdowns, I mean, like, the only competition he has for carries and snaps is Darrell Williams, who they like, but they're not going to play him over Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and they're not going to give him more touches than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And we know the Chiefs are going to have a top 3 to 5 offense, probably top 3. So, yeah, like, this time last year, and that's why he's, like, if he was going the 3rd or 4th round last year, he wouldn't have been as, you know, much of a disappointment. But he was a first-round pick. After he got drafted, the hype was crazy for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I wasn't on him as a first-round pick. I might have gotten lucky, because if you just watch him play and the offense he's in, he's going to be good. He is a good player. But now you can get him in the 3rd round. You can get him as like in that running back, you know, 12 range. And he has clear-cut top 5 upside, in my opinion. So, yeah, I do expect a bounce-back year, especially if he's more comfortable in the red zone and in 2-minute drills.
I mean, look, if people want to hear my entire diatribe about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, go back and check out the bounce-back episode with Dave Richard. Head to FTN Fantasy. Look for my Dynasty Trade article regarding CEH, because I think right now is the prime time to get him. If people are still sour on it, dude, and regardless of all the reasons that I'm going to lay out in both of those instances, the other reason why I love CEH this year is because the rushing touchdowns are coming back at him. Kansas City last year, 22nd in rushing touchdowns. You look at Andy Reid over the history of his head coaching career. Even if we just like kind of zoom out and like the last few years, last 10 years, however long you want to go back, before 2020, 13th, 7th, 15th, 13th, 1st, 3rd, 5th, 21st, 2nd, 4th in rushing touchdowns in his offense. Like, I think, and we're talking about, they were 22nd last year? Yes! The rushing touchdowns are coming back, man. So, I'm in on CEH. I think that he is a great value where he's going in drafts, both in best ball. I still think that people are low enough, because every year, Adam, how many years in a row do we have to see this? People take said player early. People hype up said player. Said player disappoints, in air quotes, in their minds. Or he's bad now. He's terrible. He's a bust. And then they don't want to trade him. They don't want to draft him the next year. They avoid him. They avoid him like the plague. And they're like, nah. And then he goes off the next year. How many times do we have to see this happen to know that that is a bad process? It's bad to do that. Don't do that, man. Target CEH and enjoy it, man. A player, again, a lot of hype. You and I talked about him last year. Is this the final time? Are you willing to go back in for Mecole Hardman? Can he become that type of fantasy, I'm not even going to say superstar. Can he become that type of fantasy wide receiver that we hoped for previously in this Kansas City offense? I'm kind of there, man. Especially, like, his ADP is super late. Like, A lot of drafts, 9th, 10th, 11th round, depending on where you're drafting and the size of the league right now. At that spot, yeah, I want exposure, but I don't know. Are you willing to go back in on it, or are you like, I'm burned, I'm done?
So last year, I was all in. And I don't like, it's in the same kind of situation. Like, you don't want to just give up on a player, because I think Mecole Hardman is an absolutely fantastic talent. My issue is, and it's always like a cop out, but like in best ball, absolutely, he's a guy to target. In regular redraft, like when are you gonna feel comfortable starting Mecole Hardman? Because he played 6 more games than Sammy Watkins last year, right? 6 more games. He ran one more pass route. One.
Oof.
That worries me, because like, yes, Watkins is gone. He's in Baltimore. They didn't add anybody of note at receiver. But Watkins has missed plenty of time during his time with Kansas City, and they still haven't given Mecole more pass routes and more snaps as a traditional wide receiver. So like, they, for whatever reason, they like letting Demarcus Robinson run routes. They like getting Byron Pringle on the field. And we know the targets are funneling to Travis Kelce, to Tyreek Hill, and to Clyde. So for me, like in a regular redraft, I'm kind of out, because I don't think there's going to be a situation where you feel comfortable starting him. But in best ball, like, we know there's upside in this offense. I just, like I just don't see that. That's really what it comes down to for me. Like, when are you going to feel comfortable putting Mecole Hardman into your starting lineup in a regular redraft league?
And I get that. I absolutely get that, man. I mean, but my whole pushback and the counterpoint to that is, where are you drafting him at? He's going to be, what, your wide receiver 5 or 6? And then if he shows out in the first few weeks, then does he have wide receiver 3 upside, considering where you got him at? Like, if you're drafting him as your 5th or 6th wide receiver at the end of your bench, and he shows out, could you see that flipping?
I guess, but my thing is, I would rather take, like, obviously, like, the elite rookie receivers over him, but, like, give me Amon-Ra over him. Give me Terrace Marshall over him. Give me Jalen Waddle over him. And if I'm looking for, like, a ceiling-type player that can actually get targets, give me Laviska Shenault over him. I think Shenault will probably go a little bit higher. But, like, you know, players in that range, like, I just think they have a better chance of being full-time players for their offenses. So, and look, I hope I'm wrong about Mecole, because I was heavily on him last year. I think there was a ton of upside, but I think I should have been a little bit more worried when they last year they initially said they weren't going to have him return kicks, and then they did. And I was like, okay, maybe that means they don't view him as a full-time receiver. So, I mean, hell, if we come into June and July and they say they don't want him returning kicks, maybe I'll change my tune. But this is one of the situations where I do want to be wrong, though.
My whole thing is that the composition of your fantasy roster in best ball and in redraft, you're not having to pay the premium where the hype was last year. Mm-hmm. You're not having to draft him super, super high, and he's going to be a bench guy. Like, even if you go running back heavy, there's no way that you're going to be drafting Mecole Hardman in a spot in the draft where he's going to be, even in 3 wide receiver leagues, where he's going to be counted on for your starting lineup. So if that's consideration, like, say you go 2 running backs, you go tight ends in the 3rd round and stuff on one of the guys we're about to talk about next. If that's the case, then you're looking at, like, okay, 6th, 7th round, you're getting your wide receiver 3, possibly, maybe wide receiver 4. Mecole's still not going to go in that range, man. He's going to be a wide receiver 5 or 6, and at that spot, I'm willing to push the button. You know, and because I think that if we see the target volume in the routes, he could climb, man.
Yeah, and we know this team is going to score touchdowns. They're going to score long touchdowns. So there's definitely upside. Before we get to the Raiders, I just want to add, we don't need to talk about Patrick Mahomes. We don't need to talk about Travis Kelce. We don't need to talk about Tyreek Hill. But I will add, if you have any doubts, like, Travis Kelce is, in redraft, a first-round draft pick in fantasy. Like, if you're in, like, that 9-10 spot, especially with the uncertainty with Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers, like, do not be concerned to take Travis Kelce in the first round. He's unbelievable.
He's insane, man. And this, you talk about, like, Kansas City's passing offense is ridiculously consolidated. And you look at his cross-positional, like, value. The guy over the last 2 to 3 years has been a wide receiver one or RB one, if you look at fantasy points per game. That is how you need to view him and get out of your mind about, like, oh, he's a tight end. That doesn't matter for Travis Kelce. Not considering his role, not considering this offense, not considering the talent, all of these different things. You view him as a running back one or a wide receiver one. That is the cross-positional value that is attached to Travis Kelce's production. And again, let's move over to the Raiders, man. I mean, we know the Chiefs are good. Spent a lot of time talking about them. Over from one team that is really, really good to a team that is probably going to be really, really bad. Las Vegas Raiders. Any interest in Josh Jacobs? Is he just a total bust and a stay away for 2021? For me, he is. He's going to go in the third to fifth round in most leagues and best ball, redraft, what have you. Even with Kenyon Drake there, people are still going to sit there and push the button around that range because that's what they do with running backs. And considering the wide receivers there, I'm out. I'm out. I'm fully out. Like, I just don't, man. Like, I feel like he is an absolute trap. I'll take the wide receivers over him all day.
Yeah, and it's not even just the Kenyon Drake addition, but the offensive line has been completely devastated. I mean, they have gone from a top, you know, 10 unit to a unit that might be like bottom five now in 2021. Like, Jacobs was top 10 in fantasy scoring at running back last year, but it was all like counting stats and volume, right? The efficiency dropped. His yards per touch, according to Player Profile, went from 5.0 to 4.3. He was under 4 yards per carry. Yes, he was third in the NFL in carries, which was great. And he was third in the league in goal line carries. But he's not catching passes. I mean, through two seasons, he has 53 receptions. He has been outside the top 20 among running backs and pass routes in both of his first 2 years in the league. Now you add Kenyon Drake, who they're already talking about using to catch passes. And if Kenyon Drake steals goal line work, I mean, Jacobs is in trouble. So, yeah, the offense is going to be middling, I would say. The offensive line is probably going to be bad. Now he has a legit, like, there were already times where Josh Jacobs was coming off the field for, you know, DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard. And now they have a legitimate back in Kenyon Drake there. So, yeah, I'm definitely worried. And I don't know how you can't be worried.
No, and I mean, are you with me if he's going to be in the fourth round? Any Josh Jacobs for you? Or are you just like, nah. Because that's where I'm at.
I mean, like, if I go receiver, tight end, and I need a running back, like, he's going to get 16 carries a game. So, like, if you're just looking for somebody that's going to get the ball, that's probably the only time I'd be, like, really interested in taking Josh Jacobs. But if I don't go receiver, tight end, or receiver, quarterback, or whatever, like, that, like, you shouldn't avoid running back the first three rounds. I mean, we know what the drop-off is at this position, so It's going to be tough for me to get a lot of Josh Jacobs on my team, unless he just really falls. And because he's still going to get the carries, I don't think he's going to drastically fall in terms of ADP.
Yeah, dude. So moving from Josh Jacobs over to, I mean, look, we know what Darren Waller's role in this offense is. We know that he's a top three tight end, not at shattering anybody's expectations or lighting the world on fire by saying any of that. My question is anybody, because we saw Nelson Aguilar have some value in this offense. We saw that role have value in this offense last year, and I'm not saying that Carr is going to support two wide receivers, with Waller being the first, but, I mean, considering the flashes we saw out of a deep threat in this offense, do you have any interest in any wide receiver on this offense outside of Waller? Anybody?
Like, if you want to take a late shot on Henry Ruggs, I get it. I want to see if they use him correctly. But, like, he averaged just over three targets per game last year. Like, John Brown should fill a similar role that Aguilar left behind. And unless they just say, okay, Henry Ruggs, you're going to be, outside of Darren Waller, our guy that we're going to use all over the field. And I don't know if they're going to do that. And we know Darren Waller is getting a 27 to 30% target share. And we know this team's still going to want to run the football. I don't know. I know you like Bryan Edwards. I just don't know if there's a huge ceiling, like, for any of these pass catchers if Darren Waller's there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ceiling is what we got to talk about here. I mean, I and again, yes, I'm in on Bryan Edwards. I think that last year was a lost season for him. I mean, he's the last pick of your best ball team, the last pick of your redraft team. That's the guy that I want to go after because I think that, I mean, look, his analytical profile was fabulous, man. We got a guy that went in the third round and he couldn't even freaking test. And then he walks into the season with a broken foot. He had other injuries that he missed games with, and it derailed his season from the very, very beginning. So I look at last year as a washed year for Bryan Edwards. I think the talent is there. The ceiling is definitively questionable. But as a guy, like, he's your last pick of your draft? I mean, we're all throwing darts at that point anyway. So Bryan Edwards or nobody past Darren Waller for me for the Raiders. Just because, I mean, look, we know who Carr is. He's not going to support a lot of guys, and it's not going to be a consistent thing. So if you're going to take shots, you're really looking at that guy filling out the back end of your roster. And if anything changes between now and week one, Bryan Edwards is the shot I'm willing to take, man. Moving over to Los Angeles, Austin Ekeler has flashed year after year after year, pass catching, rushing, like his abilities in both of those realms are unquestioned. So I have to ask you, Adam, for a guy that is going to be drafted at near the turn, maybe early second round, outside of a lot of different leagues, going a little bit outside of the RB1 range in some spots, what do you think his ceiling is for 2021?
Top five. I mean, I have him as running back eight. He was a top 10 running back when in the games he was healthy last year. And look, we talked about it in the offense as a target episode. Like, unless this team does trade for Julio Jones, this offense is going to be super concentrated, right? We know Herbert locked onto Keenan Allen as soon as he took over at quarterback. And Ekeler missed a lot of those games. But then when Ekeler was there, his targets were really good. It's going to be, and I've talked about it, it's going to be similar to the Saints with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. And that's, you know, that's Ekeler getting 75 to 80 catches. That's Keenan Allen getting 100 catches pretty much every year. But Ekeler wasn't even scoring touchdowns when he was that good in fantasy when he was active. Like, if he starts scoring some touchdowns, then, I mean, there's a chance he could be top three. I legitimately think that. Anthony Lynn, we talked about, likes to use multiple running backs. He's gone now. Like, what happens if they just say, okay, you know, Joshua Kelly, you can get like three touches a game, be a running back if anything happens to Ekeler? What if they just unleash Austin Ekeler this year? There is a immense ceiling for him. We know how efficient he is. We know how good of a player he is. We know what he does as a pass catcher. And now we know the quarterback position is strong with how Justin Herbert played last year. So the offense should be good. I love Austin Ekeler. I have him ahead of Aaron Jones, regardless of Aaron Rodgers' status. That's how much I like him. I have him ahead of Nick Chubb, Cam Akers, Antonio Gibson. Like, he's my RB8. It's McCaffrey, Cook, Henry, Kamara, Barkley, Zeke, Taylor. Those are the only guys I have ahead of Austin Ekeler this year.
I'm extremely high on Ekeler, too, for a lot of the same reasons, man. And you're going to have to head over to FTN Fantasy, check out my ranks to find out where I have Ekeler in my ranks. And it can be spicy for some, but I'm in on him, man. And for all the reasons that you stated, plus consolidated target tree, and the offensive line has been upgraded. You know, so that's not only, we always talk about that with Justin Herbert, but woof, for Austin Ekeler, that's great, dude.
They were what, 31st in run blocking according to PFF last year, and they get Rashawn Slater to fall under their lap in the NFL draft, and they bring in Corey Linsley, who was the top center in the NFL last year. Like, they, on paper, they're right up there with, you know, they're not, I wouldn't put them above Cleveland, but they're right behind Cleveland. They're right up there with New England. They're right up there with Green Bay. Like, they're very good.
They're going to be very, very good this year. I mean, basically, for all the reasons that we talked about Aaron Jones in previous seasons, like, they've basically supplanted the Green Bay offensive line, or at least two big pieces of it, with Bulaga and Lindsey now in Los Angeles. That's massive, man. It's super massive. So we're talking about consolidated targets here. We saw the ceiling for Keenan Allen last year. I'm immensely high on him this year. He's going to be, I think he's a wide receiver one. I think the target volume is going to be fantastic for all the other reasons and parts and pieces we talked about this offense and the offensive line. The volume is going to be there for Keenan Allen. What are your thoughts for him?
Yeah, I mean, it's that simple. We see him produce every year. The touchdowns used to be a problem. They're not like elite still, but they're good enough. And again, assuming they don't bring in Julio Jones, Hunter Henry's gone. I don't think Jared Cook and company are getting the targets consistently that Hunter Henry got. So there's a path for like 150 targets. Yes, I know there's an extra game this year as well, but he's right up there with like Michael Thomas and Devontae Adams and these guys and DeAndre Hopkins in terms of players you should project for a 30% target share. And that's why I love this Chargers offense, because we know where the ball's going. And Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler are both insanely efficient. So, yeah, I feel really good about all three of the main pieces from this offense.
I mean, you said the touchdowns were good. I'm going to push back. I think the touchdowns could be great this year, man. Like, he scored We scored 8 touchdowns last year. I think that's really, really, like, I don't know if people really understand that he scored 8 touchdowns last year in only 14 games. And he only started 13 of those. Like, that's the most touchdowns Keenan Allen has had going all the way back to when he scored 8 touchdowns in 2013. Like, and I think he's a really sneaky option to possibly get double digits this year. Like, I think that I will not bat an eye if Keenan Allen walks out of this season with 10 to 12 touchdowns this year. But is that a little bit too much for you?
No, because, like, Hunter Henry's gone, and if Mike Williams misses time, who's their red zone target? Is it going to be Josh Palmer in his first year? I don't think so.
No.
Like, his yards per reception have been dropping, but who cares? Because
who cares?
He catches essentially all of his targets anyway, and he's going to get 150 of them, so I don't care if he's averaging, like, you know, 9 to 10 yards per reception. Sure, would you like him to get 13, 14? Yeah, but it's not a deal breaker for me. And it's just... it's just an ascending offense, and it's a concentrated offense. And I guess if we love Eckler and Keenan Allen, like, how high should we be on Justin Herbert? And what should we expect from him in year two? Because he was nothing short of spectacular his rookie season.
I think if the weapons in this offense stay healthy, I think he's going to be fantastic, dude. I think that one of the things that kind of gets buried, and we talk about the offensive line, but Justin Herbert was top 3 in pressure rate last year. Like, for all of the great things that he did it under immense duress, Adam. And so if he has more time in the pocket to pick apart opposing defenses, plus, like, the added rushing equity we're going to get from Justin Herbert, like, it's not going to be a ton, but you can, like, sew him in for what? Like, 300 rushing yards?
Last year.
Yeah, like, 300 rushing yards and 3 to 5 rushing touchdowns. That adds to the ceiling and the floor for Justin Herbert on a weekly basis, yeah. Dude. I love him.
And they have Joe Lombardi as their offensive coordinator, who has been super pass heavy in his offenses. So, I think Herbert's going to be top 10. He was top 10 like a ton of his weeks. Like, he gave you that ceiling and floor. Like, how many running backs, going back to Eckler real quick, do you think have 100 catch upside? McCaffrey? Kamara?
One?
I think
McCaffrey's the only one with 100. I think
he could get to 100.
He could. He could absolutely do it. I mean, especially if you're talking about if a third, so we have Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, and Eckler. If they don't have, like, if Jared Cook is just, like, he's done. He's on his last NFL legs. Palmer doesn't ascend. This offense could be really, like, heavily, heavily, heavily concentrated. So I really think, like, yeah, I don't disagree with you, dude. I think that really him and McCaffrey are the only running backs that I think that legit have 100 reception upside in their offense. And people are like, okay, what about Alvin Kamara? And I'm like, no. I mean, even when we saw previous iterations with Drew Brees, we didn't see that out of Alvin Kamara. I think that Michael Thomas, and I just don't think they're going to... The pace has never been fantastic for the Saints. It's really been efficiency that's carried them a lot of years and touchdowns and things like that. So, while I think that that is also a really consolidated offense, I don't think Kamara has the upside to catch 100 balls, but am I wrong?
There is a 17th game, but yeah, I think... especially if Taysom Hill's under center, and you just wrote that awesome article at FTN Fantasy breaking down the Saints quarterback situation. If he's playing games,
it's not awesome for the Winston lovers. But the Winston lovers don't want to hear it, Adam. They don't want it.
Yeah, I saw that. It was pretty funny. Look, it's a good article. It generates a lot of interactions, which is fun. But yeah,
I'm not out here doing it for clicks, man. I just looked at the stats and just went with what the numbers told me.
But it's also a super interesting. It's also a super interesting, like, storyline entering the season for fantasy. Yep. It's going to impact a lot of things.
It really is, dude. And people like are like, okay. Well, I mean, they still want to believe in Winston, and we're getting off track here. And I'm like, what numbers are you gravitating to? Like, what is showing you that Winston's going to be that guy? Because I got it laid out here, baby. Go check out the article. Went back like 7-8 years. I went all the way back to Taysom's collegiate career. So if you want to come back at me about like, okay, well, it's going to be Jameis. It's got to be big time Jameis. Then come at me with something like a substantial argument to tell me, yes, it's going to be Winston. Because past that, what are we? You're chasing shadows, baby. That's all I got for you.
Yeah, so if you haven't read it, go check it out, FTN Fantasy. But, yeah, like we talked about it on the offense as a target episode, I'm all in on the Chargers. And if Julio gets traded changes things a little bit. But, yeah, as it stands right now, even give me some Josh Palmer late, you know?
Yep. I think he's a great target late. So, man, let's close this out, dude. AFC West, who is your breakout? Who is your bust?
This one's really easy. I think we're both going Clyde as breakout. If you want to throw in another one, if the quarterback play improves at all, Jerry Jeudy, I'm a firm believer in the talent. And the bust, I mean, choose your running back. Jacobs, Melvin Gordon, I mean, choose one of those
for
guys.
Me, it's Jacobs. I think we're simpatico here. I mean, we're basically just speaking the same language, dude. Jacobs is the overwhelming favorite to bust here. Don't want anything to do with him in redraft, dynasty, what have you. I'm with you. I think CEH is the breakout guy. If you want to go another guy and you want to go deep, yes, I'm going to get Bryan Edwards in here. I think that if anything were to happen to Darren Waller, then you could see a massive breakout of Bryan Edwards. And I'm not projecting injuries, not talking about that, but I do want to get his name up in here again because I do believe in that talent, Adam. Really, really big, firm believer in that talent. So somebody's got to catch passes for the Raiders. We sure as hell know it ain't going to be Josh Jacobs, dude. They could talk about Kenyon Drake all they want to, but until we see it on the NFL field, it's just talk. Adam and I are going to be back. We're going to be talking the last division for the AFC. We all know who it is. Adam's going to spit some Bills love, man. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.